I guess what I'm wondering is, who sucked up to Tom Brady the most in that receiver room?
I mean, that one's easy. That's Julian all the way. I mean, he followed him around like a little puppy dog early in his career, and then, you know, would do whatever he could to endear himself to Tom.
Welcome to the Green Light Podcast. Hey, thanks for being around today. If you're a Patriots fan, you're going to love it. It's one of the greatest Patriots of all time. If you're not a Patriots fan, but you love football, enjoy some in-depth football talk from two great football minds. Matthew Slater joins us, the Patriots All-Pro special teamer who recently retired. He's going to talk everything from Tom Brady, Julian Edelman, Randy Moss, to the kickoff rules, to the most important players on special teams, to every part of New England Patriot lore. Chris and Matthew go through it all. Enjoy the interview. We start off with Chris recapping his trip down to the Bahamas. He had a good little time, got a little rest, relaxation, and he checked out his favorite thing, the water slide. Enjoy it. If you're in Austin, Texas, you want to come by and say what up, we're going to be at South by Southwest this weekend on Sunday at the Four Seasons Podcast stage. Please come by and say hi. We'll have some cool interviews for you next week. We'll see you then. They call me free. I keep blowing and blowing. I ain't got me nobody. I ain't got me no love.
Bienvenido de nuevo, Cowboy Reed.
Hola, muchachos.
Do you know
caballeros?
Yeah, do you know what that means?
You said, hello, how are you doing?
I said, welcome back.
Oh, welcome back. Gracias.
How was Mexico?
Mexico was amazing. We were in a small surf town, Sayulita. I'll give everybody the inside scoop because Sayulita is amazing. It's just north of Puerto Vallarta, which is where Chris Martin and Dakota Johnson were vacationing at the same time. We were down there.
Really?
Yeah. Dakota Johnson kind of stalks me. She travels me. Chris Martin's
with Dakota Johnson.
Yep.
I don't even know who that is.
Don Johnson's daughter was in Fifty Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
Never saw 50 Shades of Grey.
That's probably a good thing. I didn't either.
Not much.
But yeah, so they were down there. We went whale watching one day. We were surfing plenty. We found a hidden beach.
Did you see any whales?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
Found a mama and baby as they're making their way, you know, south.
Nice.
Hiding from those killer whales. But yeah,
it was great.
Yeah. How about you? You were at the beach too.
Yeah, beach was good, man. Beach was good. I'll get to that in a second. First, tell people about South by Southwest.
This weekend
isn't going to be a long pod. We're going to get a lot of information out.
Yeah, so this weekend we're leaving Saturday. We're heading out to South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. We're going to have a nice little time. Might have a couple interviews for you down there. We will be on the stage.
Oh, do we?
A couple big ones. But we will be on the stage. And if you're in Austin, Texas, if you're hanging out, you can come see us. It's going to be at the Sportico Podcast stage at the Four Seasons Terrace. So if you just go into the Four Seasons Hotel right downtown off their main entrance, I'll even give you the address. It's 98 San Jacinto Boulevard. Follow the signs to the terrace. You'll see the podcast stage. You'll see lawn chairs.
But first, meet me at the dumpster with a dime bag. Because you bet your ass I am not traveling into the state of Texas with any marijuana.
Yeah, it's probably
I don't want a guy with a bucket hat putting me in his car.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah.
We don't want to do that.
One of the mailbag questions about the Bahamas was, did you bring your drugs or find some there? And that is the age-old dilemma when you're traveling abroad. The correct answer is, of course, do not bring drugs abroad.
100%. We were on the beach and like every 5 minutes, like peddlers would come up and like, hey, do you want this painting? But
the guy's nose really
every
itches.
3 minutes.
There's a guy with a really itchy nose. That just,
yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's nose is itchy at the nightclubs there. I'm like, no, do you have any Zen? Anyways, the question was, did you bring your drugs or find some there? I don't know. I thought about it a while. And then I started Googling Fox Hill Prison. You know, it'd just be me, Sam Bankman, and 600 guys with TB and fucking you just any letter disease is you can find it there. No, seriously, Hep C,
CTE.
Boys, welcome to the Fox Hill Prison, the final alphabet disease. We got Chris Long, former defensive end, who is here with his young family and tried to smuggle in an eighth of marijuana. But we take that very seriously here in the Bahamas, so we're gonna welcome Chris Long, who has chronic traumatic encephalopathy. That's what I would have to say the first night. I would have to do something to make them believe that I was like a live wire, honestly. Or I'd have to be like Chief in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Mm-hmm. The first night, I got to do something drastic because not just all the inmates. By the way, it's like in Fox Hill. I know the question was about drugs, but maybe I'm like your Smokey for forest fires. When it comes to bringing drugs with you to the Caribbean, Bahamas not the right island, okay, from just reading a little bit about it. Fox Hill Prison, not good. Six to a cell, 6x10 cell. I just imagine the Bahamas prison guards, the Bahamian prison guards, are not going to like me very much. You know, when you go to a nice resort and there's a bunch of resort workers, and for the most part, they probably don't fucking like you. White guy from the States. They know how expensive everything is there. They know how wasteful the guy's kids are. They know how bratty the guy's wife is. They're tired of fucking seeing it. Fox Hill Prison's just, I mean, like, being a worker at a nice resort in the Bahamas is just basically like being a prison guard without the use of excessive force. If I ended up in Fox Hill Prison, they would do things with a nightstick to me that have not been done before. And I wouldn't blame them. I would beat my ass for all the investment bankers and fucking finance bros that have graced your island for what feels like eons. I would take it all out on me.
Apparently they have buckets instead of toilets.
Yeah, people just shitting in buckets. That doesn't sound like something I'd do at all. I'm very civilized. I'd rather just go to my luxury resort, hollow out a carrot, and make it a pipe, and smoke shitty weed out of it, because that's what I did.
How'd you find the shitty weed?
I don't want to talk about it. It wasn't that bad. You know, there's always the offhand chance that it's laced with crack cocaine or something. But, you know, nothing to make... Nothing to make the trip a little bit more interesting. I did bring, which is not as
scary to travel with.
No, because I don't even think there's like a real law for that
right.
In the Bahamas. I don't think I'm admitting to breaking international law.
Well, you had to have it in the United
States.
Well,
don't States. Be a pussy. Man. It's not going to hurt you to. It's not going to hurt you to Google it, Matt. They're not going to kick down your door tonight, disturb you and your girlfriend. Is that how you think this works? I don't think there's anything wrong with in the Bahamas. It's, or it's weed, great. Really. Here's legalize it, decriminalize it everywhere, because here's what we've got going on. The irony of the situation, I'd probably be able to find some pretty fucking good weed in Fox Hill. So I got to travel. Like, if I wanted, I'd have to suitcase some pot or something like that to get it into. Otherwise, I got a chance smoking possible sherm, like, in the Bahamas. I'd be flipping out, running through walls, going down the water slide on angel dust because you guys can't fucking decriminalize marijuana. You know, the alternative is me just bringing some really good weed down and maybe the problem is not as many spirits, not as many rum runners.
Mm-hmm.
If I've got that loud on me. All right. Anyways, here's the deal. I don't gamble with my family's vacation. That was a very important vacation to me and my family. And I just want to say this, probably the highlight of my trip, other than the few highlights that I'm about to mention before getting the interview. When I pulled the carrot out of the fridge because I was out of papers, and my wife looked at me like she could not believe that she married me. And when I went upstairs 10, 15 minutes later, and she smelled that Reggie Miller, that gentle sea breeze took it right from the upstairs porch back down into the great room there. Lovely, lovely property.
Wait, why did you use a carrot rather than an apple?
Because I don't like doing the apple thing, man. And I didn't have any apples.
Okay,
so we didn't have any apples. So I wasn't, if I wasn't going to go buy rolling paper somewhere in Nassau, then I definitely wasn't going to go get an apple somewhere. I just dealt with what I had. You know that when you have a slab of knives and they're all stuck in there, you know, fine cutlery. We had some fine cutlery. We also had that fucking poker looking thing that people put like through a prime rib, or I don't know what they do with this motherfucker. But that's what I had to use that to puncture and then hollow out this carrot.
How long a process was that?
Oh, the carrot was this long. How long a process was that for me? Like 5 to 10 minutes. You should have seen my wife when I walked back downstairs, stoned to the bone. She looked like she had just finished up a 64-ounce glass of Haterade.
It's a great feeling engineering a piece.
Oh, fuck yeah. Especially when your wife looks at you and said, maybe he could live without me. You know, maybe I could leave him for the weekend. He'd be okay. I was so proud. You want to talk about like when man took his first step on the moon, when I got this carrot to work for me, I could do no wrong.
Where's the carrot? Is the carrot in the trash?
Carrot's in the trash can with the rest of the in the weed.
Is it a code break to give your dog the apple so nobody knows? I used to like sneak my weed in high school and I would use the apple, and then to get rid of the evidence, I'd give my dog the apple.
Oh, you can have your dog eat the apple. Yeah, but no problem. No problem. No problem. Dog doesn't know. My dog eats shit. You think your dog was worried about smelling a little bit of bong water, so to speak, in there? Okay, and then Dan B asked, how was the water slide? Because everybody knows when I go on vacation, I like to hit the water slide. I like to go fast in my underwear.
That was your destination right after you talked to Bo her on Tuesday.
Couldn't wait to go to the water slide. One of the two water slides was shut down. Luckily, the one that was that has a dark tunnel was not shut down, because I love that one. I probably went down it 14 to 17 times. Now, day two, they opened up water slide two, and I hit that one too, but it just didn't hit the same. So had a great time at the water slide. The best part of the trip, other than hollowing out that carrot and just stunning on my miserable wife. No, I love you, Meg. You're the best. We had a great trip, but my favorite part of the trip was when Luke was going down the water slide. And Luke has really good eyes. He spots things. Like, he spots bald eagles. He spotted a golden eagle the other day, kicked my door down at home, like, just saw a golden eagle. I'm like, bro, okay? So, anyways, comes down the slide. And in this slide, he's moving. Shoots down into the water, comes back up, and he can swim. But, like, he's not a swimmer to where, like, I feel like I got to be down there, you know? So I'm watching the whole thing. And he goes, he comes up for air, he looks around, he goes back down under the water. I'm like, what the fuck could be under there? He comes back up with $100 bill. Okay. I said, holy shit, buddy. He's swimming over to me with $100. I was like, get back there. We need to go. There has to be more. You drop a couple $100 in the water. You don't just drop $100 in the water. It's a nice resort too. So he goes back down there, and we counted $440 that we found at the bottom of that pool. God. Okay, and we were going to keep it until I found an Amex, and that just made it too personal. Yeah. You know, like, I know who I'm stealing from.
Then you got the name, so there's nothing you can do.
I look around the resort, and I'm like, everybody here seems to be doing very well.
So you know? Just gave back the Amex, right? Because there is a finder's fee.
Well, so this is the thing that I felt weird about, because my first thought, in all honesty, was like, okay, this is one of those moments where, like, karma kicks in. So, like, even if this guy's the biggest rich asshole in the world and can afford to lose, like, $500 going down a waterside, which I'm sure he was a really good guy, okay? But good people lose money, too. Even if this guy could be, you know, Saddam Hussein, I'm going to return the money, because this is about karma. This is like one of those moments where you're being tested, right? So I call my wife over. I've got to help with my other son. And I come back. I'm like, what'd you guys do with it? Well, we returned the money. I said, yes. She said, yeah. I said, what do you mean, yeah? She said, well, we kept $20 as a finder's fee. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I was like, yeah, give it to the boys.
You just watch your goodwill meter go.
I said, you did that. I said, just so you know, I'm not getting hit by a bus. Might be you, homegirl. She's not getting hit by a bus. She's not going anywhere. All right? She's not going anywhere. Her husband, got ingenuity.
Engineer qualities. That's perfect. I don't know if you've seen the videos of the guy. He's got like a pet bird that he sends out, and he picks and he finds like money. This bird like finds money.
Really?
So that's what
a money bird.
Yeah, and you've got
looks like Luke, a money bird.
He's your money bird.
That is my money bird. That dude is so fucking lucky. We are gonna send him to a casino as soon as he is of age. People are gonna. You know how people are way too into Little League, you know, sports. I'm going to be way too into getting him to like run numbers for me. He's just got a gift. Okay. Only art that I want to review. Well, I saw a couple things in my travels. I saw Octopus Murders, which was very interesting. I told Matt about that. Probably check that out, but probably don't watch his Stone. You're probably going to want to pay attention during this show. There's a lot of details in four episodes. Also watch Chimp Empire.
Oh, that's what Nate was recommending.
Has been recommending Chimp Empire. Kyle has been recommending Chimp Empire. Everybody's been recommending Chimp Empire. And it's basically, it's a show on Netflix that follows around a lot of chimpanzees. And, you know, I'll put it this way. Being a chimpanzee kind of sucks. They almost have it all figured out. These motherfuckers live in the jungle, the most beautiful place in the world. They can get by on anything, eating other monkeys, like they do.
I know.
You know, just kind of like they're like the raccoons of the jungle. And so they really have it made. Like the one thing that gets them is they're fiercely territorial. They cannot kick that territorial instinct. So they just end up living these very stressful lives when they could be chilling. They could have it made in the shade. They could collaborate.
And they're being exploited by Netflix. It's unfair labor practices. They don't get paid.
They didn't get paid. You're going to give the guys names, but you're not going to pay these chimpanzees. But here's the problem. They're so territorial, they don't work together. They don't get anything done together. You know what their entire life consists of? Honestly, if they became human beings, like right now, and they became Americans, I don't think they think shit was that weird because all they worry about is the border. If you watch Chimp Empire, half the time they're just walking around in a fucking circle killing other chimps on sight. Okay? These guys can hold stuff. They can communicate. They can emote. They can groom each other. They live in the jungle, but their lives are fucked up because they're too territorial and they're worried about the border. Kind of sounds like, you know, sounds like the one thing that we got it made, but we're just so fucking territorial. Everybody's so tribal. And that's the one thing I noticed about these chimps, too. We're not that much different from the chimps, are we?
No.
We just have PlayStations and fast food and shit and quickie marts and fucking sex shops. These chimps they're very simple, you know? They are about grooming and securing the border. if that's a show you want to watch, have at it. Okay? Matthew Slater. Matthew Slater is, how do I do this without sounding like myself the thousand other times that I've talked about how awesome Matt Slater is? There are some people who make you feel like shit about yourself and don't even try. And that is because some people are just better. They are just better human beings. They have more resolve. They have more conviction. They have more stick-to-itiveness. They're just disciplined and selfless. And honestly, Matt Slater is like poster child for that kind of guy that you want to be great friends with, but also you spend half the time like wondering, like, is he just that much better? Because he is. Like, as a human being, he is that kind of guy. And I always talk about this. There are so many amazing guys that play in the NFL that nobody gets to focus on because all we focus on is the bad news, the bad stuff. But when somebody like Matt Slater is somewhere long enough, especially like in New England, you get to know certain players. And I know Patriots fans know the guy a little bit more than everybody else in the NFL. But I think the one thing that everybody feels when they look at Matt Slater's career is respect. Special teams, and I say this talking to Matt in a second, it's like the Wild West. I mean, you know, it is literally the hungriest football players in the country trying to make a living, trying to stick on a team, oftentimes being the last guy on a roster. And these are the people that Matthew Slater, not only the kind of person that Matthew Slater was when he got in the league and had to continue to be, because he wasn't a position player, essentially, as a Patriot. I mean, he was a wide receiver, but did not get a lot of game action playing wide receiver. The reason people are talking about him being in the Hall of Fame is because he was so great at his job for so long. And that job was special teams. I mean, it was a few different things on special teams, but he survived in the hungriest environment in pro football, in the hungriest pro sport in America, in the hungriest environment within that sport for over a decade, well over a decade, as an older player in a special teams room, which is becoming increasingly rarer in the NFL. So you have to have equal parts, you know, kind of like hunger, prickliness, competitive spirit, and also, you know, that kind of stick-to-itiveness that I talked about, that caginess, that, because Matt Slater wouldn't get any faster. It looked like he could still play, even though he shut it down. But, you know, every year it had to be harder and harder, and those footsteps behind you, when you think about the mental struggle of, like, trying to keep your job in the NFL, had to get louder and louder for him. I mean, I don't know how loud they were for him last year, but being an older guy running down on punts, I mean, it is not an old man's game. So I have so much respect for special teamers and a ton of respect for Matt Slater, and obviously he retired this last week. And I think what's interesting about him is, like, a lot of guys came and went. He really saw that thing through to the bitter end. Now, I don't know if that was intentional for him, but I know that he wanted to play one more year. He talked about that in the interview. It's crazy. He could have avoided the iceberg. Anybody could have seen what this year was going to look like. Maybe not as bad as it ended up being, but the fact that he opted into that thing and was like, I want to finish strong, burn the ships, whatever happens, happens, finishing that way. He definitely went down with the ship, man, and that was a true captain, somebody who I really enjoyed playing with and was a great leader. So here's Matt Slater, and then we will be back early next week with some more.
And if you are in Austin, come hang out with us Sunday, 6 p.m. Central Time, local time.
Hey, y'all. Greenlight has official merch, like this hat right here, or like the one on my head. This is dad hat. Love this hat. I'm not even a dad hat guy, but this thing fits great. This hat right here fits great. We've got hoodies. We've got by the way, this hoodie's like super comfy. I mean, it's like soft, plush. It's not the type of hoodie that's gonna get stiff with one wash. And the shirts too, because like I'm a big comfort guy, okay? You got like this white shirt here. You got the shirt with the logo, the Abbey Road looking logo with Dr. Fax smoking presumably a blunt, Kyle carrying Cowboy Reed, making dribbling a basketball, which I've never seen him actually do, and me carrying a football. And then you've got the black shirt here too with the logo. So stickers, hit the link in the description in the video, below the video actually, and make sure to tag us on social media showing off your Greenlight merch. It's quality threads here, okay? Wouldn't do it any other way. This has become a Patriots podcast. I mean, don't say I don't love the Pats. I got Steve Belichick on 1 week, and now I got newly retired, one of my favorites, Matt Slater. Matt, what's up, dude?
What's going on, brother? I really appreciate you having me. This is awesome.
This is incredible. I mean, like, I don't get to see you talk much, you know? Like, I know you personally, but people don't hear you talk enough in long form, so I'm psyched about this.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Anything for you.
Let's stop it, buddy. Stop it. Let me start with this, because we've talked about this. Obviously, you just retired.
When did you know it was time?
Yeah. That's a good question. I think last offseason, as my wife and I were thinking about this season, we kind of decided that this would be it, you know, based off where I was physically, where we are as a family. You know, we have four kids, and, you know, she just needed me home more. I wanted to be home more. So we kind of made the decision last year that this would be the last go-around. So, you know, it gave us an opportunity to really enjoy the season, right. Enjoy the, you know, everything about the football process. And, man, it was other than being 4-13, it was really fun.
Other than that thing, which we can talk about, but I want to talk about the emotion, man. And I guess part of that probably has a lot to do with how the games are going on the field. Like when you think about an ideal one more run, that's not it. But there's probably a lot of beauty that you found just in going through the motions, so to speak, and finishing the season. I mean, like, I know it's tough, but when it's the last time doing this or the last time doing that, was it emotional for you, and did you find joy in doing that?
Yeah, you know, it was very emotional. It was tough. I feel as though as I've gotten older, I've become softer. So it's hard to hold the front and to act like you're doing okay. It was certainly hard. That last game, that last week were very tough. My parents were in town. My brother was there, my family. So, you know, I tried to take it all in, and I was just overwhelmed with gratitude. I mean, I never expected to have a chance to retire from the NFL. I just always assumed the game would be done with me before I was done with it. So just super thankful. It was emotional because, you know, this is a game that I love, and you know the feelings that, you know, we've talked about it, just what this game has meant to me. And so I'm just super grateful.
Was the last game a little extra surreal because of the snow and the fact it was the Jets, and it was like people were speculating it was Bill's last game too?
Yeah, it was kind of like the perfect storm, if you will. You know, just it made it extra special. Southern California kid playing his last football game in a blizzard. You know, I was really hoping that it wasn't Bill's last game, but, you know, that was certainly in play, and that gave certainly me extra motivation to go out there and try to perform well. So, you know, it was a special day, you know, playing against a team that we don't like very much, but they got us, unfortunately. But, you know, nothing but gratitude and positive vibes about the whole thing.
So with retirement staring you in the face, buddy, you know, I can't remember exactly what I asked you a week ago, but I was – in some effect, I was like, are you afraid? You know, because it's scary as hell. I mean, you know so many things, but you know one thing really well, man. And, you know, the routine that we get into, the teammates, just the whole way of life, it changes. And I wonder how much you've lamented that or how much you've thought about it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think for me, just being so routine oriented, for the last 25 years in terms of playing football, I always had a very clear path forward. I knew what to expect for the most part. I knew where I had to be, what I had to do. And certainly professionally, this is the only profession that I've ever known. So I think for me, it's just the unknown, right? Like I'm not sad about retiring. I'm not sad about the way things ended for me. It's just the unknown, like, okay, what's going to be next? How am I going to be able to use my gifts? Am I going to be able to use my gifts? Am I going to be, you know, satisfied in what I'm doing? Am I going to be able to be present and accountable for my family? So there's just so many unknowns that makes it challenging. But, you know, that's where I just kind of rely on my faith and trust. Hey, let me just take things one day at a time and see how we go.
All right, so let's say it's Sunday, 2024, like some Sunday in October. You know, you've already been to church. Where's Matthew Slater watching games? Like, how do you picture that going?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, probably in my basement somewhere with my sons yelling at the TV like every other fan.
Just you know, wait.
It's definitely going to be strange.
It's wild, dude.
It's going to be strange. I'm sure I'll have mixed emotions. It'll be definitely kind of like a double-edged sword, but I look forward to it. You know, I look forward to not having my knees hurt, not having my neck hurt, not having all these things hurt, and just enjoying the game that I love. Obviously, I'll be pulling for the good guys and hoping they can turn things around. But, yeah, it'll definitely be a weird feeling.
I got bad news for you. Everything still hurts.
Don't tell me that.
It's not the way you picture it. It's not the way you picture it. All right, so those are some of the things, your neck, your knees, the everything. What are you going to miss? What are the little things that you will miss about clocking in every day at Gillette?
Yeah, being with the guys. I mean, honestly, that's what makes the experience, right? Just the people that you share that locker room with day in and day out, the bonds that you form. There's no place like a locker room. I love it because you can get 53 guys that are totally different in almost every other walk of life, but they come in that locker room and they find common ground, and just the laughs that we share, the shared struggle. I don't think that you can really find that anywhere else unless you're in the military or unless you're, you know, a fireman, police officer, something like that. So I'm going to miss that more than anything. You know, I'll miss the grind. I'm a little bit crazy in that I enjoyed the grind of football. I enjoyed preparing. I enjoyed competing. I'll certainly miss that, but I'll miss the guys more than anything.
You miss Ted in that kitchen too. They had the Pats had a really nice food setup, is what I remember.
Hey, I'm going to tell you this. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm the cheapest guy in that building, and I would get those meals to go every night.
Yes, sir, dude.
And I'm not just getting a meal for me. I'm getting the whole fam, double bag.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to find a way to, like, keep my key card active, maybe talk to RKK and get some of those meals going.
Do you think Mayo will do a good job of bringing guys back? I feel like Bill liked having guys around the building that used to play, but he was kind of selective probably about who, you know? I feel like Mayo, with his youth and, you know, a little bit of an effort at a fresh start, as hard as it is to follow Bill, I think one of the things he'll probably do is it'll be lively in there. Do you think the Patriot way changes? You know, like, there's a lot of people wondering, what is the Patriot way? Can it survive a coaching change?
Right. Well, that's a great question. I don't think the Patriot way changes philosophically. Maybe the way it's applied and executed changes. But I mean, all those things in terms of like doing your job, working hard, putting the team first, I think those are principles that you can apply in almost any arena, right? And certainly it would be smart of Gerard to continue to try to work towards those principles. Now, you and I both know Gerard, like he's gonna be different. I mean, he's gonna be laughing, joking, having a good time. And that's fine. I think he needs to operate within his strengths. But I do think, like, look, the last 24 years, that place had a lot of success. And I don't think you just wanna burn it to the ground and forget what was done there. So he's got to find his kind of middle ground and go from there. And then, you know, in terms of bringing guys back, I love that he hired Hightower. I think that's a great hire. I mean, the guys will love High, and I hope that he continues to, like, engage guys from the past. Not live in the past, but just, you know, have those guys around and show the young guys what it looks like.
Yeah, it's super cool to be able to, like, walk into work and see, like, hey, I know when I was in Philly, Brian Dawkins was in all the time, you know, coming in with y'all, there'd be greats, former greats, kind of walking through the halls sometimes, and some of them were on staff. So I think that stuff's really important. How about with Mayo, the DeMarcus Covington hire? I know you've been around him. What's this guy all about? And in general, how do you think Mayo's going to handle that staff, if you had to guess at it?
Yeah. Well, I love the DeMarcus hire. I really do. And the thing that I think DeMarcus does the best is just he has tremendous people skills. He does a great job of investing in guys in terms of just relational equity, earning their trust, learning about them as men off the field and outside of the building. And I think he really shows his players that he cares about them. And that's going to really set him up to have success. Football is a relationship business. Like, there are plenty of people who know X's and O's, but can you connect with guys and motivate them and bring the best out of them? And I think he can. And then in terms of his staff, I mean, look, this is a whole new staff. It's a big staff for once. We never had big staffs while I was in New England. And they're guys that are, you know, from different trees. And I think that's good, right? I think it's good to kind of go outside of the box, incorporate new philosophies. There's more than one way to skin a cat. And I think a lot of good coaches in this league with good ideas. So I love what he's doing. I just hope it all meshes together. And I guess we'll find out come the fall.
Yeah, no big expectations or anything. That's not how this works. Dude, that's just crazy. The guys like our age, we're three guys in the same draft class, okay?
It's nuts.
You, 10 Pro Bowls later, Mayo, getting a chance to take the keys to the Ferrari, dude, and drive it down the road a little bit, and we'll see. So it's crazy.
It is wild.
And there's more young coordinators now, like Baltimore's hiring a young guy here. Yeah. You know, it's really cool to see guys our age have real power in the NFL.
It really is. And I hope they do well with it. I really do.
Well, I mean, Bill always had really tenured guys on his staff. And I think, like, right now I'm getting to watch that. I don't know if you're watching Dynasty at all, the new documentary about you and your teammates, and possibly a little bit about our team in 2016. I haven't gotten that far, but just some of the characters, man. Ernie's the first one that pops out that people always want to know more about. And I feel like maybe you can tell us without, well, now that it's all shut down, maybe we can just talk about it. But what did Ernie do exactly? Like, describe what Ernie, because I know he is a powerful man and a powerful football mind.
I mean, Ernie is like the Oz in the Wizard of Oz, right? He's just like this strange character, strange figure. Nobody really. See, when I got to New England, nobody introduced me to Ernie. It wasn't like, hey, this is Ernie Adams. He does this. I'm sure you had the same experience.
Yeah.
He just showed up, and one day he's coaching me on the field. One day he's whispering in the corner to Bill. Yeah. You know, I'm like, what does this guy do? But I think the more time I spent around Ernie, I was like, there isn't anything this guy doesn't know about football. Yeah. Like, any question I would have, rule-related, football history related, you name it, Ernie could address it and it was no problem. So to me, Ernie might be one of my favorite figures in Patriot history just because the mystery that surrounds him. I'm glad that people are getting a chance to see what he meant to the success there in New England, because I think he really contributed a lot behind the scenes. You know, Ernie, I can't help but laugh every time I hear Ernie talk. It's like, yeah, you know, like it cracks me up. It's so funny. But I love Ernie. Ernie was really good to me during his time there. And like I said, I think he's the man behind the man. I mean, I think he informed Bill. I think he advised Bill in a lot of ways and really helped our team be successful.
Who was a guy through that run that you think didn't get enough credit as an assistant? You know, because we know about Scar. You know, Ernie is kind of that shadowy figure that everybody respects because, you know, he's the head man's right hand. And then, you know, there's a lot of other guys. Josh got a lot of credit offensively. But who do you think maybe didn't get enough credit on that staff?
Well, I think there are two guys. One guy kind of does get credit, and that's Ivan Fears. I think that he, as the running backs coach and at one point in time the receivers coach, he had to really deal with a lot of interesting personalities and bring them into the fold. And I think everybody on that team respected Ivan, the passion that he brought to the game, just his disciplined approach, his regimen. I think everybody appreciated Ivan. I think, you know, his value oftentimes get overlooked. And then another guy that I'll throw out there is Chad O'Shea. Chad O'Shea was the receiver coach.
Yeah.
And, you know, Chad's having to deal with guys like Randy and Wes to guys like Dola and Jules and everybody in between. And I witnessed him firsthand, essentially babysit Jules for 2 or 3 years. And I'm like, God bless this guy. He is a saint. Because Jules was out of his mind. Yep. And Chad found a way to keep him engaged, keep him going, keep challenging him, keep him improving. So I really think Chad doesn't get half the credit that he deserves.
Yeah, Chad was a great guy. Great guy to just run into in the hallway. He had a lot of coaches like that. When I was there, it was Dable and Chad. And there were just a lot of fun guys, man. And not everybody's the same. You know, like I don't think everybody's personality is the same. I think sometimes, you know, you try to bring some of those principles somewhere else and it might not work out. And maybe the guy's trying to be Bill a little bit too much. I said this to Steve last week. I was like, you're the perfect guy from Bill's tree because you're trying to be the opposite of your dad.
Right, right.
But you know everything that they know there. But I think, you know, when I look at your situation, and I'm sure towards the end you were like a player's coach too, like, you know, a player coach as well. Like, you're on the field making plays, but you're also helping young guys. You had a really unique seat at the table because you weren't expected to get reps in the wide receiver room, right? Like, and you were a veteran and somebody who was respected almost immediately. But I guess what I'm wondering is, who sucked up to Tom Brady the most in that receiver room?
I mean, that one's easy. That's Julian all the way. I mean, he followed him around like a little puppy dog early in his career and then, you know, would do whatever he could to endear himself to Tom. So by far and away, that was Julian.
Jules is obviously a suck up, but there seemed to be like a Mendoza line or a cutoff for guys that could go on vacation with Tom. So there was like, there are tiers of your relationship. It was almost like The Bachelor. You know, like, was there ever tension around that Mendoza line where guys were like, I want to be on vacation with Tom. It's like only these two guys get to go. Why can't I break into that next level of friend group?
Well, you know, I don't think anybody was expecting to break through. That was kind of one of those things. If you get the tap on the shoulder, you're honored and you're like, man, I'm just happy to be here. I know, again, I can't get on this guy enough, but the one guy who really, like, cared about that was Edels. I mean, he was always, like, he was so hyper-focused on what does Tom have going on, who's with him. You know, Gronk was there, Dola was there, I wasn't there.
Oh, why was Dola there?
Oh, my gosh. Don't let Dola have any experience that Jules didn't have, or he's going to lose his mind. And just for the record, we used to call those two. They used to argue, like, who's Batman, who's Robin. We'd sit in the meeting room, and it'd be like, who's Batman, who's Robin? And I would just like to settle that debate for all time's sake. Dola is clearly Batman. Better looking, smoother.
Dark, handsome.
Yeah, I mean, it's better jawline. More masculine. It's not even close.
I was going to say, neither of them are big, big guys, so do they really have Batman, you know, like,
I guess
stature?
They don't have Batman presence, right? I guess not. But if you had to pick one in those two, it's definitely Dola.
They're going to be mad. I think Gronk might be Batman and they're Robin.
Yeah, that sounds better.
I mean, they were both so great at what they did, and they did so much dirty work, and they were so tough, as you know. Like, they're two of your best buddies, and, you know, I feel the same way about those guys. And, you know, I've watched Dola in St. Louis get an injury that they said only happens in car accidents, where his sternum had to get popped back out, and the guy's ready to assault the athletic trainers because they won't let him go to the game. They'll go back in the game. They got to go to the hospital. And, you know, Jules is really tough. What was it about evaluation of guys or what they valued in that room in New England? Because it never felt like you went after the big fish. You did with Randy.
Yeah.
But it felt like you were like, we can make it work with guys who aren't, quote, blue chip guys.
That's right. Look, Randy's the outlier. I mean, Randy's the outlier in every room he's ever sat in.
Yes.
We'll make that clear. But, you know, I think for so long, Bill and the staff really prioritized toughness, both mentally and physically, over maybe talent. And, you know, we won a lot of games with guys that were considered lesser players, in terms of their measurables. But the one thing, and people who know the game know this, is that you just cannot measure a guy's ability to execute with the, when the pressure's on, a guy's ability to be consistent, a guy's ability to do things that he doesn't want to do, but he's willing to go in there and sacrifice for the team. When you have a team full of guys like that, it really sets you up to have success. And we had so many of them. I mean, not just at the receiver position, but at every position, at every level, on both, on all three sides of the ball, you had guys that were, hey, maybe not the most talented, but they were tough and they cared about football. And then there was 2016 where we did have Chris Long and all these high flyers, and we were talented.
Uber talented, you know, veterans is the way I like to frame
it. That's what it was. Know?
Yeah, I used to win that race up the hill all the time. You guys were like, this guy's so fast. Ninko used to make fun of me because he said I was running like I had concrete in my boots. That's what happens when you play in St. Louis for most of your career, buddy.
Oh, gosh.
So what's it like being friends with Tom Brady? Like, for somebody who's not friends with Tom Brady, I mean, I am, but I'm talking about people at home that don't know what it's like to know Tom Brady personally and talk to him every day. Like, what's it like being his buddy?
I mean, he's honestly one of the nicest people I've ever been around. I would say the most humble superstar that I've certainly ever met. Like, just down to earth, doesn't take himself too seriously. I think he loves his friends well. He cares about the people that care about him. And that's always impressed me about Tom. For someone who's achieved so much and gets lifted up so much by our industry, he just keeps himself level-headed and humble. And he's given me so much great advice over the years about just life. And outside, away from the game of football, that I really appreciate. So, man, just think of him as your everyday buddy that you can count on and that you know always is going to have your back. And that's what I think of when I think of Tom.
What's the most off-the-board thing you could see him doing in the next 10 years?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know. I think at some point here, like, because, look, Tom's tapped, obviously. You don't play 23 years in pro football without being, like, tapped. Mm-hmm. So I think at some point, like, he's going to need an outlet for that. And he's going to do something. Like, my man's running 40s. Like, why are you running 40s at 46 years old? You can blow your hammy off.
Rookie time.
You're going to blow your hammy off the bone. Like, he's going to start doing something just to get that competitive edge out.
Yeah.
And who knows? It's going to be funny, though.
Could be an extreme sport. We'll see. My lasting memory of you, besides being obviously one of the greatest special teamers ever, one of the best teammates ever, and somebody I always say, if I had to leave the country, I would leave my kids with you. I don't know if you would like that, but seriously. My real lasting memory of you and your legacy in my book was the single greatest heads tails call in Super Bowl history, and one that changed my life forever. The guy we were just talking about, Tom Brady, getting ready to go into overtime with the Atlanta Falcons in 2017, after the 2016 season, the year that me and Slate played together. I can remember when we won the toss, me, Hightower, Alan Branch, and Ninko grabbed our helmets, walked over, sat him down on the bench, and took a seat and said, we're not going back out on the field. That's how great that guy was. And you allowed him to have the ball first. So what went into that moment? Are you like, do you think about your heads, tails calls the night before games? Do you have one in your back pocket? Like, because that was huge.
I'm a heads guy. I mean, I have probably called heads at every coin toss I've been a part of. And it's simply because my dad did that when he played. So I remember being a kid, and I was like, Dad, what do you call on the coin toss? And he said, I call heads. And I've called heads ever since then. And I, like you, when I looked over and I saw that thing said heads, I said, we're winning the Super Bowl.
We're done, bro.
We're winning the Super Bowl. Like, there was never a doubt in my mind that we're going to win that game. And what a feeling to have that guy on your side with the ball in his hands in that moment.
It was incredible. As a sidebar, There's also some people that talk about 2015 when you deferred in overtime, and so I want to give you a chance to clear your name.
Can we clear that? I appreciate you allowing me the opportunity.
Bro. I'm a journalist.
To clear the record.
We hadn't even really like hung out yet, but I got your back.
I'll rewind this back. In 2013, we played Denver at home in a windy game, a lot of weather. We go to overtime. Bill tells me we want to kick the ball off, or we want to defend this in. Okay, great. We win the game. Boom, we come over there. It was unconventional, but we win the game. So in 2015, same thing happens. We go to the coin toss. Bill says, hey, we want to kick the ball off. I said, all right, great. So the only thing that happened in that was once we won the toss, Cleet Blakeman knew our selection. So he said, you guys want to kick? I said, yes. And as Cleet was going to speak to the Jets players, I said, hold up, do we get to choose which end? And, me, I'm kind of an animated, dramatic type of guy. So my face was looking, they had the mic on, and they hear me saying, well, don't we get to choose? But there was never any confusion.
Oh, no.
There was never any confusion. We wanted to kick the ball. We wanted to kick the ball.
Yeah.
Then, you got Sims and them up in the booth. Oh, he made a blunder. And I'm just like, people, do you think that Bill Belichick would let me screw that up and then go down the road and call the biggest coin tosses in, our franchise's history?
Yeah,
no. Dude. He knew what happened. I knew what happened. The uninformed announcers with the half cut out mic on Cleet Blakeman set me up as the fall guy. So
you got set up, bro.
That's what happened. And then at that time, Steve Harvey had messed something up at the Miss America.
You were
so they
you
got
were
Steve Harvey's head on my body. People are sending it to me. I'm like, what is going on here? It's ridiculous.
Well, what's the thinking behind just kicking?
Well, I think he was thinking weather in that game. Like, all right, they're not going to drive. We stop them and they have to punt. It's not going to be a good punt. Then all of a sudden, we're going to be set up with field position. Unfortunately, yes, we kicked the field goal and we win.
No. Here's what I'm going to say.
They drove.
Here's what I'm going to say. I am so glad I'm hearing this because I had a take this year. The Jets were playing the Giants in a ugly game, and it goes to overtime. Now, if I was the Giants, there's no question in my mind, the DeVito-led Giants, and this is early DeVito, not when he got hot, that the Giants received. I am kicking that ball off if I'm the Giants. There's no way I'm going three and out and punting the ball to the Jets at midfield to set up a short field. They're also not sustaining drives. So your best chance to lose that game is to receive the football.
Exactly.
And people fried me for that. I was like, I'm glad that Hoodie agrees with me on this.
Right? I mean, look, Hoodie's with you all the way.
Okay, and so is Slate.
Absolutely. I don't question the Hood.
Okay, well, let me ask you this question. They're talking a lot about kickoff. They're saying they want to change it. I'm hearing a different thing every 3 days. What do you think is going to happen? What do you think should happen?
Yeah, it's really disappointing that this play is being jeopardized. You've heard a lot about, spotting the ball or doing this, that, and the other. Now I'm hearing about the XFL kickoff and maybe doing that. And really, here's my thing on this, and I can say this because I'm no longer an employee of the NFL.
Nice. Yeah.
But this is CYA all the way. I mean, they're trying to do what they can to minimize blowback from players, from the public in terms of like head injuries, right? And they're going after this is easy pickings, the kickoff, which in their mind, the rate of injury is higher on there. There's some debate around that if you look at the raw data and things like that. But I'll say this, there are inherent risks with football. You know that, I know that. All of us have signed up and agreed to those risks. There are certain things that needed to be taken out of the game that we have taken out of the game, but this isn't one of them. You know, you're you're going down a slippery slope. What are you going to do next? Take out the ISO lead where the fullback's running up in there like a batter.
They already
man.
Did.
Like, yeah, I know. Nobody. Everybody gets in the gun on fourth and one now.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But it's like, all right, where do you stop this? Yeah. And for me, it just, you know, I'm concerned that eventually they're going to do away with the play, and you really change the game, and it's unfortunate.
Was it just a little too brutal when you got in? I mean, you came in and they had the wedge, right?
Oh, man. Now that, I'm glad they took that out. Look, yeah. we got a 10-yard running head start, which, okay, fine. But then you got your wedge buster who's 205, 210 pounds running down into two 300-pound guys like a raging bull. That's just,
yeah, dude. And
that's
they're
no
all the
good.
Hungriest guys on the damn roster.
Exactly.
That's the thing that's so unique about you is, like, you had a very established role on a team and played for so long, but you were in the room full of the hungriest guys that had the most to lose, and none of them were like you. Like, when you're – I always tell people, you think football is tough, go play special teams.
Yeah.
You know, because all those guys are fighting to survive and running as fast as they can. Who has the hardest job, you know, of on the special team side of the ball? Is it just punt return, or is there another position that people aren't thinking about?
I mean, it's probably a three-way tie, right? The punt returner who has to stand back there, look at the ball in the air while guys are beaming down on him and make a decision as to, can I make a play or am I going to get decapitated? And I've seen it happen both ways quite a bit. The gunner, who's on the outside, is being double-teamed all the way down the field by two of their best athletes, their fastest, strongest guys.
Two guys from Florida.
That can just roll.
Just two guys from Florida chasing you all over the field.
Oh, my gosh. And then it, maybe the hardest job, and, you know, people are going to laugh when I say this, is kicking the ball.
Yeah.
Is being the kicker. I mean, you know, when you go out there, all eyes are on you. You have a chance to, in a lot of cases, put points on the board, win a game, lose a game, and maybe you haven't kicked the ball in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you got to go out there and win a game, and it's 20 degrees, and, you know, the whole season or the whole game is on you. Like, no thanks. I don't want that job.
It's almost bath time, Slate, so I guess I'll ask you a question about the kids. Do you think that they'll be able to play football? And if so, how early? Because you and I are both second generation. I think we have unique experiences with our dads playing, but also being in one piece. You know, your dad still looks great. My dad still looks great. They both look younger than us.
That's crazy. It's crazy.
but not every outcome is like that. And, you know, like, mm-hmm. I know you kind of alluded to, hey, there's an inherent injury risk. Do you think the kids should play?
Well, you know, my approach is going to be similar to what my dad's was, and that's put them in everything other than football, especially early on. You know, I don't want them to feel the pressure of having to do what we did and follow behind my dad and I. And I also don't want them getting hurt at a young age. I don't think that you need the contact at, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old. You don't need the contact. Now, if they want to play later in life, I'm going to support them. And I'm not going to push them, but I'll support them and, you know, help them any way that I can. The unfortunate thing is that my sons love football, especially my oldest two. Like,
yeah.
My four-year-old can tell you all the stats and the teams and the guys. And so it's going to be hard to really get them not to play. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. My wife is hoping like heck that they don't. But, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you sound like my parents. They said anything but football, and we're going to let him go play football because the first day he's going to come home a little bloodied, and he's going to be like, I don't want to do this anymore. And they created a monster because I liked it. I wasn't very good
right.
at it, but,
right.
and, you know, that's just kind of what we got to deal with. And on top of it, people are going to expect our kids to play. So
yeah, that's right.
You know, and that's the hard thing, I think, is, you know, what's harder than that decision is how you shape their childhoods being sons of. You know?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
All right. So I got three quick hitters for you, and then, okay. then we'll get out of here. All right. Toughest loss in that Super Bowl run. And it could be a Super Bowl. It could be one of the five playoff games. Because I don't think people realize how hard it was to get back up that mountain. For that
losing to you guys in 17 by really? Far. Look, I mean, you guys were a great football team.
Yeah.
But we had an opportunity to win that game.
Yeah.
We had an opportunity to win that game. The better team won that day, no doubt. But, to you know, we had a chance to win three in a row there. If we win that, you know, that was two in a row, and then
yeah.
we won the next year. So that would have been special. And, you know, I thought we played well enough to win. It's one thing when you get in those games and you don't play well, but we played well enough to win and just wasn't our day.
You did play well. I will say this, and I said this to the other guys, like, I feel like, not to take anything away from the defense that year, but the biggest mismatch on the field was our offensive line was like, it was the Monstars. And,
oh.
and then your D-line just wasn't a great rush group that year. And so I was like, if we have the time, we might be able to score. I was going around the facility all week asking guys on offense, how much can you score? How much can you score? Because I think Brady's going to get after us at some point. Do you get the Jason Kelce thing? Like with everybody, do you get the magnetism of the guy? You would love him. I don't know if you ever.
I
know you hate the Eagles after that Super Bowl. I had to ask.
I have always admired him from afar. I think he's a tremendous ambassador for our game, and I think he's just a fascinating character. And I'd love to get to know him, but I think he's so fascinating. And you talk about everything that this game should embody, and that you hope a player embodies. I think he embodies it. And then what he's done off the field to move the game forward, right, I think has been tremendous. Like him and his brother in their podcast I think is awesome. I think they're very authentic, and I think they're real, and people appreciate that. But, yeah, man, I was hoping this guy was going to play till the wheels fell off because he's got football left in him now. He's got football. Great. It was a sad day to see him retire, but I wish him well, and he's got a big fan in me.
Well, that's cool, man, because I know the Eagles are a sore spot. What? Let me ask you the inverse: favorite Super Bowl win?
Favorite Super Bowl win? I mean, that's like asking me my favorite kid, but you know, I think that 28-3. I mean, it's hard to top that, right? I mean, 100 times we lose every last one of them, so. That was really special, and that's something I'll never forget.
All right, last one. You played for one team. You played with a ton of guys. I'm going to ask you one guy you wish you played with that maybe you wondered one off season, is this guy going to be one of our mercenaries? I wish I could have played with this guy.
Well, you were on that list for a long time, so I was able to check that off. I think, you know, I don't want people to take this the wrong way, but one guy that's always fascinated me and I've loved watching is Aaron Rodgers. You know, and he's a different guy. You know, I know him and I are very different people with very different interests, but I think it'd be just an interesting experience to be around a guy like that. Obviously, I have a great appreciation. Probably other than Tom, he's probably my favorite quarterback ever in terms of just the way he plays the game. So, yeah, I'll say Aaron Rodgers.
He's must-see TV, man. I mean, just I used to watch Tom throw the ball and be like, I'm watching history every day at practice.
Right, right.
And I think in the same vein, the freak show nature of Aaron's arm, to be able to watch that every day in practice.
It's unbelievable.
All right, well, you never know. I mean, maybe you come back to the Jets next year.
If I come back to the Jets next year, I'll be looking for somewhere to stay because my wife will boot me out of this house.
I love it, man. Hey, congrats, man, on just a kick-ass career. I mean, you're just first class, man. Love you. And
love you too, man.
Yeah, this is going to be a great, great experience for you, figuring out what you want to do.
I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, man. Well, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.